Walk the vintage rose here at Whitman Field early, before the crowds thicken and the heat comes up off the ramp. That's when you find her. A big high-wing cabin monoplane sitting on fat tires, a round engine up front, and a wing that doesn't run straight out the way you expect. It bends, it comes off the top of the fuselage, kicks upward, then tapers back down to the tip like something out of a dream. You stop, you have to. Everybody does. That's a Stinson Reliant, the Gullwing, and if you've never stood next to one with your coffee going cold in your hand, well, pull up a chair, because that's exactly where I want to take you today. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and you're listening to The Hangar, coming to you this week from the middle of the greatest gathering of airplanes on the face of the Earth, EAA AirVenture in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Every summer, the whole tribe flies in here, and the vintage area fills up with airplanes that were old when your grandfather learned to fly. Today, we're going to talk about one of the prettiest of them all. But first, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First, solo, private, pilot. Instrument rating all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it, and every coin tells a story. Go have a look at AviationSoul.com. Now, the Reliant, to understand this airplane, you have to understand the man whose name is on the tail, and you have to understand the time it came from. We call it the Golden Age of Aviation. Roughly the years between the two world wars, back when avgas was cheap and airspace was free, and an airplane wasn't yet a tool of mass transportation so much as it was a promise. A promise that a man with enough money and enough nerve could rise up off the ground and go anywhere he pleased, faster than anything else alive. Eddie Stinson was one of the great pilots of that age, and most folks under 60 have never heard his name. That's a shame, and I aim to fix a little of it right now. Eddie Stinson came up flying in the years around the First World War. He was one of that hard, colorful breed of early aviators, and he could fly anything. He set endurance records, staying aloft for a full day and more back when just keeping an engine running that long was a genuine feat of will and mechanical sympathy. His sisters flew too. The whole Stinson family was aviation royalty before anybody thought to use the word. And in the mid-1920s, Eddie decided he was done just flying other people's machines. He was going to build his own. He set up shop in Detroit. Now that matters. And here's why. Detroit in the 1920s was the beating heart of American industry. It was where the automobile had already proven that a machine could be built well, built beautifully, and built to sell to a man who had done all right for himself. Eddie Stinson looked at that, and he thought, why should an airplane be any different? Why should flying mean sitting out in the wind and the oil spray in an open cockpit with a leather helmet strapped to your skull? His answer was the cabin monoplane. An enclosed cabin. Comfortable seats, room for your wife and a couple of friends. Windows you could see out of. An airplane a businessman could climb into wearing a good suit and step out of at the far end still looking like a gentleman. In its day, this was the executive airplane. This was the private aircraft of the man who had arrived. The early Stinsons built the company's name through the late 20s, the Detroiter, the Junior models, solid, handsome cabin ships that sold well and flew honestly. And then in 1932, tragedy. Eddie Stinson was flying near Chicago and the engine quit. He was low over a golf course with people down below him. And here's the thing about the men of that age. Eddie Stinson, right to the last second, was fighting that airplane to keep it away from the people on the ground. He clipped a flagpole. The airplane went down and Eddie was gone, still a young man, still at the controls of a machine that carried his own name. He died the way a lot of the Golden Age greats died, flying, trying to do the right thing with a dead engine and no altitude to spare. But the company he built lived on, and that brings us to the airplane sitting out there on the grass. Now here's where it gets interesting. The Reliant name first showed up in 1933, and those first Reliants had a straight wing, a perfectly good airplane, sold fine, but it looked like a lot of other cabin ships of the era. It wasn't until a few years later, around 1936, that Stinson's engineers gave the world the airplane we remember. They redesigned that wing completely, and what they came up with was the double tapered Gullwing. Let me tell you what that means when you're standing in front of it. Because the engineering is beautiful, and it's the kind of thing you can see with your own eyes. Most wings taper one way or another. This one tapers two ways at once. Look at it from the front and the wing rises up off the top of the cabin, bends at a hard point out near where the lift strut attaches, and then angles back down toward the tip. That's the gull bend, the same idea that gave the bent wing warbirds their look, though this was a gentle, graceful version of it on a civilian airplane. And then look at it from above. The wing is fat and deep where it joins the fuselage, and it narrows steadily out to a slender, rounded tip, deep at the root for lift and strength, thin at the tip to cut drag and to keep that tip flying clean when the rest of the wing is ready to quit. That shape wasn't for show, although Lord knows it looks like a piece of sculpture. It put the thickest, strongest part of the structure right where the loads are highest, up against the fuselage. It gave the pilot a better view up and out over the top of the cabin. And it gave the airplane gentle, honest stall manners, because a well-designed taper like that lets the inboard wing give up before the tips do, so you keep your aileron control right down into the stall. That's the difference between an airplane that mushes and warns you and an airplane that snaps a wing and ruins your whole afternoon. They hung a big radial engine on the nose. Different models got different power plants over the years, Lycoming and Wright and others, generally in the 250 to 300 horsepower range and up. A round engine. So when you fire one of these up here on the ramp in the morning, you get that sound, you know the one, the lumpy, uneven cough as the cylinders catch one at a time. Then the settling into that deep, syncopated round motor rumble that no flat four Continental will ever make. Stand downwind of a Reliant at startup and you'll smell it too. Warm oil, a little raw fuel, hot metal. That smell is the golden age bottled inside. This was the point of the whole airplane, mohair upholstery, a real cabin, room for four, sometimes five. Some of them had interiors that would embarrass a modern light airplane, with nice trim and appointments and the feeling that you were riding in something built by people who cared about how it felt, not just whether it flew. This was a 1930s luxury automobile that happened to have wings. That was the whole idea, from Eddie Stinson's first days in Detroit all the way through. The top of the line was the model they called the SR-10, and the finest of the goings. By the late 30s, these were about as much airplane as a private owner could want, fast for the day, comfortable, good-looking enough to turn heads at any airport in the country. If you were an oil man or a rancher or a company that needed to move its people around the wide open spaces of 1938 America, the Reliant was on your short list. And then the world went to war, and the Reliant went with it. Here's a piece of history a lot of people don't know. When Britain needed airplanes to train navigators and radio operators before the American factories were fully turned over to fighters and bombers, a whole batch of Reliants went across the Atlantic. The Royal Navy's Fleet Air Arm flew them. They wore military paint, and they did the unglamorous but absolutely vital work of teaching young men how to find their way through the sky and work a radio. So those men could go on to cruise on the airplanes we all remember. That gullwing cabin cruiser born as a rich man's runabout in Detroit, put on a uniform and went to war. Not many airplanes have a life story like that. After the war, the surplus ones came home, and a Reliant could be had cheap, the way so many wonderful airplanes could be had cheap for a few years there. And a lot of them got used up, hauled freight, sat out in weather, got tired, the fabric rotted, the wood in those wings dried out, and plenty of Reliants quietly went away the way most old airplanes do, one forgotten tie down at a time, which is exactly why the one on the vintage rows here matters so much, because somebody saved it. That's what I want you to think about when you walk past these airplanes this week. Every single flying Reliant at Oshkosh represents years of somebody's life. Somebody who tracked down a project, maybe a fuselage in a barn and a set of wings in somebody else's barn two states over. Somebody who learned the old ways, how to build up a wooden wing rib, how to stitch and dope fabric so it's tight as a drum and true to the way the factory did it in 1937. How to find a magneto for a radial engine that hasn't been made in three generations, or how to make the part yourself when you can't find one. There are type clubs, folks who keep the Stinson faith and share the drawings and the hard-won knowledge, and without them these airplanes would be gone. And this is the whole reason EAA exists. This is the reason we all fly into this field every July. It started with folks who believed that an ordinary person in an ordinary garage could build an airplane or bring a dead one back to life, that the knowledge shouldn't die. That heritage isn't something you put behind velvet rope in a museum, it's something you start up and fly and let the kids climb into. When you see a gullwing Stinson taxi passed on the grass here, engine loping sun coming through those big cabin windows, you're watching that whole idea made real. The golden age didn't end, somebody just kept it airworthy. Now, I'll be honest with you. And longtime listeners know I get a little grumpy about the modern world now and then. I look at some of the airplanes rolling off the line today, all screens and software, and part of me misses the days when an airplane was wood and steel tube and fabric and a round engine, when you could see how the thing was made just by looking at it. But I'll tell you what fixes my mood every single time. It's walking these rows, because as long as there are young people leaning under the wing of a Reliant asking the owner how that gullwing works, and as long as somebody's willing to spend 10 winters in a cold shop bringing one back, then the future of flying is in fine hands, better hands than we deserve, maybe. So do yourself a favor this week, find the Going Stinsons. They'll be out there in the vintage area, sitting quiet in the morning light. Take your time, look at how that wing bends and tapers, find the owner, and I promise you, that owner has been waiting all day for somebody to ask. Then stand back when they fire that radial up and let that sound settle into your chest. That's a piece of 1937 talking to you across the years. My thanks today to the folks at EAA, whose vintage area makes this all possible, and to the Stinson Type Club faithful and the aviation historians who've kept Eddie Stinson's story from being forgotten. If you want more hangar flying tales, you know where to find us, over at RadioHangar.com. Eddie Stinson didn't live to see that beautiful gullwing, but it flew for decades. It went to war and came home, and it's out there on the grass this morning at Oshkosh. Not bad for a man from Detroit who thought flying ought to be comfortable. Go find one before the crowd does. I'll see you out on the rows.